Friday already?
Oh God. Yeah. Thank goodness.
Thank God. TGIF. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, Educated Educators Talking Education. Yes, it is Friday, and man, we know what that is. It is Producer's Choice. Jacob, the chairman of the board, actually takes over the show, puts me and Johnny in the hot seats, kind of drives Tim to want to consider drinking again, but you know,
what's going on, Tim? I don't attack you or something. You're too nervous about the show.
I'm not actually nervous, but I just want to point out too to people, you know, the hardcore followers. Yes, if you didn't see it on YouTube, Wednesday's classes in session, Jacob's nose was bleeding, and He showed us the unartistic way you can take a Kleenex, or as my mother-in-law calls them, tissues, and instantly get back to work by just shoving that up in that bleeding nostril. Jacob, what a trooper you are, my friend.
Yeah, Tim, I'm a hardworking guy. You know, I'm dedicated to the show. This is the most important thing in the world to me. And if you want to bring up other incidents, you know, I did split my pants on a homeroom once. We didn't mention it, but if people want to go back, I mean, there are plenty of things we can remember about times Jacob had a small emergency on the show.
You know what, though? Your commitment and, you know, effort to making sure that Busted Pencils always comes first. It was there. Johnny Lupinacci, we miss you. We understand, though, man. You know,
holy smokes. First week back at it, right? Yeah. We are fully going on campus. Classes are happening and we're scrambling around, you know, filling in classes, making my way. Like, you'd think I was a new college student on campus this week, teaching in different buildings and bustling around and realizing that, you know, what, I have a 40-minute walk between my class and when I'm supposed to be on Busted Pencils. So I'll get this worked out right and trying to figure things out. But yeah, it's been, you know, week one under the belt and, you know, 14 more weeks of the semester to go. That's kind of us college semester folks are used to that 15 weeker, you know, so that's week one in the books and it's Friday. Hey, Tim, and I got to say, shout out to your mother-in-law. She's actually correct. It's a tissue unless it's a brand Kleenex.
I know.
Right. I'm guilty of that all the time too. I always call every kind of tissue a Kleenex.
I call my vacuum cleaner a Hoover.
There you go.
Yeah, only if it's a Hoover.
I don't follow your specific rules, Johnny. Okay. You can't put me in a box. I use these layman's terms, which are sometimes brand names.
Yeah. Next thing you know, you're going to try and take over the Friday show and start.
I call all podcasts Busted Pencils. That's just, to me, it's ubiquitous.
Yeah, exactly.
Jacob, man, I'm nervous. Everybody knows that, but I'm going to hand it off to you, my friend.
Thank you, Tim. You know, you don't have to be like Sarah Palin, afraid that I'm going to ask you a gotcha question or something. Yeah, we have fun here, Tim. We're on the same team, except for when you keep calling me out for my nosebleeds. But I'd like to think we're friends because it's time for
Choo Choo Producer, Jacob's Choice, Chairman of the Board. Ow!
You now have two choices.
Chairman of the Board, Jacob.
Ow! Jacob, Chairman of the Board.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
We choose to go to the moon.
Life's full of tough choices, isn't it?
You chose poorly.
Gentlemen, it's time for Producer's Choice because
it's a Friday once again.
So we're all excited to be here. Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, I appreciate you coming on your own show for this one. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Jacob. Thanks for inviting us.
I wouldn't miss it, even if I was trying to make my way across a busy campus in week one, man.
So that's what we're going to talk about today, actually, Johnny, because you were not able to be here for the that show we do, Class in Session.
Yeah.
Great show. Love it. Producer's Choice, I never forget for some reason. but you were a little late because this is the first week back at school. And that's what we're talking about, folks. We're talking about teachers going back to school. It's that time of year. Everyone wants to hear about it. So I'm going to start us off with a fun question. Dr. Tim Slecker, Can you tell us a story about a bad time you had one year going back to school?
Jacob, every year back to school changes my mood, no matter what, into sheer excitement.
Ooh.
And no, you know what? I'm kind of not far off from that, though, because I have always been in that position of going like, I can't wait to get back. And I'll even say that as a kid, mm-hmm. I couldn't wait to get back to school. Like the end of summer was not a dread. It was not a, you know, it was just like, okay, man, finally get back, get to hang out. I really saw the attendance, the social part of the school, as being something that I really looked forward to. The teaching and learning aspects, I did a lot of criticism of that. We've said that. So back to school, it just generates, whether I was teaching second grade, fifth grade in the city of Baltimore, teaching my, social studies methods class, teaching graduate level courses. I do not have a bad back to school moment, Jacob.
Tim, you are not this positive. All right. We've been working together for a while now. There's something hidden behind those eyes and your positive answers, but I'm not gonna gotcha this time. I'm gonna let you go because I know you fear my questions. Johnny, come on. You gotta have at least one horror story from heading back to school in your many decades of teaching. Hit us with one of them. Come on.
Well, I'll say this much. I'll get you with one. I hated going back to school as a student. I liked summer. I did like, but the thing that things Tim talked about in there, you know, it's hard to find a bad back to school memory because it's the exciting time of year. And Tim, much like myself, like we were back early in football and different things mm-hmm. as students. And then as a teacher and a coach, the same. But Jacob, the toughest back to school fall for me ever was the very first year I wasn't teaching at a high school anymore, or a school, because I had gone grade school and then come back up. But I was no longer a classroom teacher, and I was starting in the fall as a professor. Mm. And this, Jacob, was like my worst back to school fall ever. I relocated across the country, and with most people are used to relocations and moves, and I didn't realize there was a big change in culture in terms of what teachers wore to school out in the Pacific Northwest. So, I came in my shirt and tie, and then on the first day wore a suit because as a teacher, all my years of teaching, you wouldn't have even thought of going to work not wearing, at least a shirt and a tie, maybe not a suit, but a sport jacket or something if it was chillier. But you always had a shirt and tie and dress shoes and dress slacks or pants. And man, was I ever like laughed at, joked, poked, hey, where are you from? What do you think? You're the president? Like what? And I'm like, what? What is everybody? Somebody moved here from the Midwest or the East Coast, but that whole fall was just, my rhythm was off. I had homesickness. I missed my students in the class. I had new students. They were college students, but it's very different. I missed my colleagues. I missed the whole ambiance of back to school fall. So that was my worst back to school, everything. I mean, we could go on and on. There could be a whole graphic novel, funny book about all the ways I was making mistakes left and right that fall back to school.
Hmm. Well, I think those transition moments are often where we have those tough memories. It's the first year of high school. It's the first year of middle school. It's the first time becoming a professor instead of just a high school or middle school teacher. It's those moments where we get caught up in all the things we don't know and don't know what to expect. That's when it's hardest. I'm going to open this up to both of you guys to talk a bit more on that subject. I mean, what is it like when you go from being elementary, middle school, high school teacher to becoming a professor? I mean, what is that transition like, becoming a professor, when you head back to school?
Johnny, I had actually a different experience, and maybe it was because I think your relocation of truly across the country, I think that was really disruptive in that sense. And so I didn't really have that kind of move. I went from, you know, I stayed on the East Coast. I moved from, you know, the Baltimore, Washington area up to, you know, upstate New York for my first professor job, SUNY Cortland. And I just was really ready to get at it because I, for so long, was so wanting, you know, I mean, my desire to become a professor came from a real, I'm not going to use the H word, but a real concern for my colleagues in the K-12 world and their inability to be really awesome teachers. And I thought, you know, hey, I'm going to become a teacher educator. So when I got that first, you know, assistant professor of teacher education position, you know, I was fired up and ready to just like kick it because I was going to, you know, change the world. So that transition for me was really empowering because I had gone back to school, and this might be the difference between I made the decision to leave teaching and go back to school full time. Mm. And, you know, I had those 4.5 years of working on my graduate degrees to really kind of get in a headspace of making the transition from K-12 teacher to becoming a quote professor. And I was ready to kind of make that move. I'm not saying I did all the things I thought I was ready to do, but I was excited. I made the move, and it was almost just like I felt when I walked into school on the very first day for my first day of becoming a teacher, a second grade teacher. I was like, I am ready for this gig. I felt the same way for my faculty position at SUNY Cortland.
Johnny, you already kind of touched on your specific experience making that transition, but I was wondering if you guys could talk about sort of in the broad strokes. I mean, what differences are there between being a high school teacher and a professor when you're getting ready to head back to school?
Yeah, Jacob, there's some big ones, man. At least I experienced, and Tim's right. He touched on it. I had a different pathway. So I had already been teaching teachers and working in teacher education and just had always envisioned most of my career being a classroom teacher, having an evening class or a Saturday class once a semester. And, you know, really fell in love with teacher education through being a high school teacher. Some of the biggest shifts, like this, what that fall I referenced as my worst back to school fall, was the first time I didn't have, and I think I've talked about this here on Busted Pencils, maybe even a Producer's Choice episode. Didn't have a whole bunch of young people that I was responsible for, but also who I were sort of co-learning with, who I, you know, were checking in with every hour, sometimes 40 some new students, right? There's, you have a different interaction with your student base, and they're older and they're really looking to you more to teach them. And yes, of course we break the mold and we don't just go up there and lecture for an hour and we do activities and things. But it's all of a sudden like a giant community that you're in. And it doesn't have that same sense of like, hey, it's the however many hundred of us all together. Now, of course, once I adjusted and sort of became more active in my college and in the programs and things, then that sort of felt that came back together. So one of the biggest difference, Jacobs, I think when, you know, high schools, middle schools, even elementary schools, there's sort of a set community bound by a bit like one building. Yeah. Maybe even if there's a couple buildings, if you're at a big high school, you know, there's maybe the East Wing or something like that, or the athletic complex. But it's pretty tight and you see the same sorts of folks. And so the biggest shift being it scales up very quickly. The other thing I would say, Tim, you could speak to this because we've had different university experiences. All of a sudden, Jacob, there was I was my own boss, even though I have like I owe accountability to the taxpayers and like, yes, I work for my students and yes, I have a department chair. But there's, it's sort of like this idea of like everybody's in charge of themselves more than anywhere I've ever worked in my entire life. So take that for what it's worth, better or worse. Some days I'm like, wow, man, who's in charge here? And then other days I'm like, oh, it's nice to be kind of have this autonomy. But I think there's a lot less of a time management strictness, which you might think, well, that means you don't have to work as much. Well, it's like when you don't have a fixed, like, hey, school starts at 7:15. I want everybody in their classroom and then at the school. And then this is the time you're allowed to leave or whatever, you know, like as being a teacher, I always reported to a principal or to the building kind of culture of stuff. And so, you know, when you go off into college, it's a lot different. You have to do certain amount of work, but there isn't any system of like clocking in. And there's no way necessarily to know. I guess, I mean, they could take like when I use my key card to scan the building and see how often is this guy here. So I think by and large, you know, professors are working around the clock because there's like, there's no clock in, clock out. But those are the two biggest things that come up. And then Jacob, I just missed, you know, for me, that transition was about missing how natural it was to be like, hey, we got a football. Even though they have those things in college, like as a professor, you're not part of the coaching staff at a college. As a high school teacher or even middle school and those levels, like you wear many hats. And as a university professor, all of a sudden you're like, well, I mean, I'm busy, but I'm wearing only one hat. I'm a professor. And it feels like I'm missing some of those components, like whether it was coaching or being a club. Now you guys know, no spoiler alert, like I've worked my way into feeling more at home, and I'm the hockey coach and I'm the professor. But this is a rare thing. Most, I think, probably only high school, middle school, and elementary teachers bring to the university. It's like they're like, hey, I'm used to being a teacher and these other things. So those folks of us in education tend to be, you know, involved in campus in different ways than maybe some said other professors who might be listening.
It's kind of funny because the students go away to college and suddenly they have more independence and it's more up to them to, you know, manage your own time, get things done on time. But it's the same for professors when you go from teaching at a lower level to now you're a professor, a lot more independence, a lot less direct management. I think that probably contributes to the sort of freer atmosphere on a campus than you might feel in high school. For me, thinking about what you guys have talked about before, the big thing is talking about coming back to school and having your room that you can set up how you like it, you know, put things up, decorate. That's a difference when you go to college, isn't it? Because now you don't have a room. Sometimes you're in the auditorium. Sometimes, hey, go to this room. You're teaching there. We're doing this. Your rooms are all over the place. What's that like?
On that one, too, it's kind of interesting because particularly, at least as a first and second year faculty, you know, I was so excited to be a professor that first year that when I got, you know, my teaching schedule and it was like, you're in Miller Hall from 9 to 11:50 and, you know, you're in the auditorium. It wasn't a rub at all. It was just like, this is great. You know, I get to go over here. But as time went on, you start to, and Jacob, you really labeled it really nicely. You miss the fact of having a set space where you can create also, you know, the classroom environment of a culture around the things that you're teaching, you know, and particularly when I was, you know, working with future elementary education teachers, right? You know, I would do lots of artwork, lots of things that I want to hang up in the classroom. And, you know, I remember one time, you know, I was assigned to the same room, but it was, quote, a science classroom, you know, real science. And Johnny, I mean, I had my students create these mobiles, you know, the things that hang from the ceilings and put like, I hung them all up, you know, and I left. And that department head got in touch with my department head and said, hey, Slicker's got to take, And here's the part, though, that really rubbed me. He's got, you know, that childish crap that they're doing in elementary education, that really devalues what we do in this science classroom.
Oh, man.
I know. So, but in fact, though, we actually, though, then getting more senior, made a case when I was at Penn State that the elementary education program, we got our own space so that we could set it up as what it might look like in a real classroom with smart boards and all that. And it was a dedicated space. So, yeah, interesting kind of like tale of going, wow, this is great. I get to teach here. I get to teach there. To, oh, my God. You know, and then, holy crap, now that I want to do really cool things, I got this crazy guy yelling at me to going, you know what? We'll fix you. Give us our own space. And we got it. So there's a quick story for you.
Oh, yeah. I think you're right, Jacob. More often than not, it's pretty standard that, like, you just get, just like professors, just like students, get a room number of where their class is going to be. And you see them kind of moving around campus trying to figure out, okay, I'm going to be in this room at this time. And like Tim said, with some seniority, you might get some regular spaces to teach in, or based on like the kind of class. Obviously, if you're like teaching chemistry, you probably have a chem lab. But that doesn't account for like your big lecture or your study breakout rooms. Those are just in classrooms all over campuses, and it's a logistical nightmare. And by and large, a different back to school than, say, setting up your classroom. Although, Tim, you hit the nail on the head. I've been in a couple of situations where we've had like a classroom that looks like a classroom because we're teaching, you know, elementary methods or classroom management. And so we have a classroom that's sort of assigned to, hey, who's teaching that particular course that needs the classroom to look like it's an elementary school. But yeah, it's a big shift. Do you remember going to college, Jacob, and seeing like the difference? Like, wow, yeah. Nobody really decorated these walls, huh?
Yeah. It's funny because when you go to a college class, you start to build, you know, you come in as strangers over time. You get to know each other. It's more of a community. You develop your inside jokes from Jacob's nose was bleeding that one time, and now we all remember that. But the room is completely sterile every single time. Yeah. I mean, nothing about it changes. And that is a big difference from high school, middle school, elementary school, where over the course of the year, you know, those projects are up or these things are up and these memories kind of become part of the room. It is a difference. Absolutely. My last thing that I want to touch on here, I know, you know, we're back to school. This is probably going to come up in conversations a lot. So this is not the last time we're going to talk about this part of the year. But the thing that I am thinking about most when I go back to school, whatever grade it is, first day, we have to get to know each other. And part of that are little games and little tricks that teachers have to try to spur those conversations and get people to start getting to know each other and for them to get to know their students. So I'm going to start with you, Johnny. What's your favorite or your go-to first day activity to try to get people to go from strangers to a class?
Well, I'm going to give you a quick go-to one that I do. But I have a few up my sleeve to try, and I'll let Tim sort of plug this because he is the guy who recommended to me, but I took some classes with ACUE. And that really helped me rethink about syllabus activities and ways to engage your students on the first day. We call it Silly Week on our campus. Like, you know, all the students are like, hey, this is the week we're going to hear about syllabi in every single class, yada, yada, yada. But my go-to get to know each other, because I often assume that students are coming from like four other classes where they just done the same activity, like introduce yourself, let's hear your name and tell us something funny about you or something someone doesn't know. So I'm an elementary ed social studies teacher, so it's already set up kind of like elementary room, but I have some stations and you go and you pick up a piece of paper, right? And you go and you pick up weapon of choice, I call it, kind of like, you know, pile of crayons, whether you want a box of colored pencils, whether you want markers, whether you want pens, how you want to group and sit together. And they get in these kind of round tables and start working. And the prompt is to draw a picture that describes a place that has had a significant impact or influence on who you are today. So they get there and that's it. That's all it says, you know, draw a picture that represents or communicates a place that's had a significant impact on who you are today or an influence. And so the prompt is up around the room and they, you know, spend a better part of the time. And I say, okay, now share a little bit at your tables. And then we do some share outs. And then, you know, I say, write your name on the back. And it's part of a three-step assignment because we do this as a warm-up two more times and add to it. But it's a fun way to get into geography, talk about social studies, communities, places, where we've been, how they're influencing us. I don't say whether it needs to be a positive or negative thing, but just a little bit different. And then I kind of have, they have those out there, kind of like placemats at their seats for the first couple of class periods because they flip it over and add to it in some writing and things. But then I get to know that it's like, hey, it's Tim who drew a picture of a baseball field because he played, you know, high school baseball in Renton or what. Yeah, I get to learn a little bit, I think, in a fun way about the students, about their place. And it's a little bit easier for me the older I get than the name game I used to play. Mm. Like, Tim, pick your favorite fruit that begins with the first letter of your first name.
Oh, and Johnny.
And then here's the trick. You got to say all the people that went before you. And then
shut up. Wait. Stop.
Was that yours? Actually,
that was mine.
All right. Well, I'll pass the mic because y'all got mine and you're like, wow, weird class. Sounds like coloring class. All right. No. Pass the mic to Tim. Tim, tell him your favorite first day activity.
That was one of the things that I did, though. Yeah, the silly name game, and you get in a circle. And this is, though, from my, like, I did a lot of work with outdoor rec and camp counseling and things like that. And so these are kind of, you know, sitting around the campfire activities. But the name game. And if anybody's going, oh my God, well, yeah, you send, hi, I'm Tim. I like tacos. You know, Taco Tim. Okay. And so the next person then would say, well, hi, Taco Tim. Nice to meet you. I'm Jacob and I like jumping jacks. And then Jacob, you know, and so you go around and the unfair part of that game is if you're the last person, because you then have to introduce everybody that's gone before you until you come up. But it's the idea of Taco Tim. It also gives them an ability to hopefully remember their names. And I actually do, from a name standpoint, I don't think it's actually a bad kind of game to get people to know each other's names on that. But then I also incorporate into that some kind of trust activities. Where, you know, it kind of like, hey, I want you to get in groups of five now that you've done the name game and you know each other. And four of you, I want you to stand, and one of you, I want you to get in the middle, put your arms across your chest, stand as tight and stiff as a board, close your eyes, and you have to trust these people. And you're going to just lean and let yourself fall backwards. And your team is going to kind of push you around as a floating object. And then they repeat that and do that. And it's a trust game. It creates, you know, it breaks down because, you know, there are some students as they're about to, quote, fall back, they just can't do it. And all of a sudden they open their eyes and go, oh my God, I can't do it. and things. But you know what it is? Hey, guess what? These are icebreakers is what we call them, Jacob. You know, it sets that. And Johnny gave a great one that actually has some content involved in it too. But it's really just to break down that kind of like, oh my God. And, you know, it puts some people in an uncomfortable position for sure. But it's through that uncomfort that we get to know people.
And if you were like me, Tim, I'd be like, I abstain from participating in this. Have fun. I love y'all. Taco Tim. This is Jumping Jack Johnny. I am not doing the trust activity, but I trust I'll watch and that'll be enough for me to be trusting of you guys.
I tried the trust fall once, actually. That's how these nosebleeds started. They did not catch me and it's been a problem.
Yeah. No, I love it though. I love it. And Tim, you know, I got to ask you, you know, this is why I stopped doing the name game after so many years, is because I always felt like you're kind of, well, I'll see what you think, but the last person to do it is supposed to be you. You start with the person next to you, and then it comes and ends with you.
That's why Tim still does it. He doesn't have do it that
to,
way.
You have to repeat. You have to repeat all 26 names that went before you. So and they're brand new to you. So
yeah.
It was always a great way to learn names, but I got worse and worse of it over the years. And then I finally gave up and have put it to rest in the graveyard of, as Tim said, icebreakers. But Tim, I got asked, did you do the version where you're the
cleanup crew? I'm the cleanup, because I say it was a great way for me to learn their names.
And for any teacher out there hearing this, it's all like Tim will admit this too. This is a great way. You will start day one by saying like, hey, we all make mistakes, and watch, I'm about to make a bunch as I don't remember. Like I'll be like, it's taco. Is it Tim? Right. Yeah. And so you kind of break down some of those first day, like it's not okay to make a mistake in this space and be like, that guy just butchered 80% of our class names, so fun stuff. First day of class kinds of activities.
You know, this was a great one. I think a very good episode. I want to wish you guys both luck heading back for another semester of educated education. I believe Taco Tom and Jambalaya Jim, I want to say. Thank you both for coming on. Of course, I'm producer Jacob. And before I wrap this show, I always do one more segment. So we're going to do that because it's customary and obligatory.
Let's go!
Guys, starting with Tim, as a person, not as a teacher, what's one of these icebreakers that you hate being put into?
One of the ones that I absolutely hate, and I don't know if you know, again, a camp activity, you get a group of at least five people. You put one hand, everybody puts one hand in the middle and they grab another hand, and then you put another one. You have to make sure that you absolutely don't grab the same person's hand. And then it's a big spider web mess, and you have to, without breaking hands, figure out how to unknot yourselves into a complete circle. Hate it.
The human knot.
Yeah, hate it.
Thank you, Tim. And Johnny, same question to you. What's one of these icebreakers that you hate to participate in?
I wasn't joking earlier about how I would be the one abstaining in Tim's class. It's any it's any kind of like quick and immediate trust fall related activity, or lift, like a group is going to collaboratively lift. If I'm going off the ground and hands are going on my body, like we're way outside of the comfort zone. So, human knot, I can handle-ish. I don't love it, but anything where I have to fall backwards or like lay down or, be actually physically vulnerable position, ain't happening. It's an automatic hate.
But together, you guys are unstoppable, because Tim is so trusting, and Johnny, you're able to defeat the human knot. So you're basically a superhuman when you put yourselves together. Thanks for coming on again. You're a great guest on your own show. But Tim, I think there's time for one last thing.
You know what that time is, Jacob? It's time for a moment of Zen. Patriotism doesn't mean support of government. Patriotism means support of the principles it's supposed to stand for.
Thanks for listening to this special episode, Jacob's Producer's Choice. And remember, you can grab great podcasts packed full of more Busted Pencils content on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course on the Civic Media website or at bustedpencils.com. And, in case you don't already know, we say it at the end of every show, don't be late for homeroom on Monday, and you can grab next week's class and session, hopefully no nosebleeds, on Wednesday. And if you don't already know, there's a lot of information here. It's repetitive, but stay with us, Pencil Busters, because our favorite thing, Saturdays broadcast 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations. For 1 hour, that's right, one full hour of your favorite blue collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busted pencils.